Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksuba Staf Pei Hei. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 10 lines from the top. You'll immediately notice a diamond shape around Avimi. We're in the middle of a very long series that we started in our previous shiur, and if you want, you can note the Mivne, the structural note that introduced this back on the Pei Dalet Amud Beis, where we indicated these are maisim, these are incidents, sheyesh bem inyanei tfisa ugvias chovos. We discussed the issue of tfisa in our previous shiur, so with that in mind, that everyone is familiar with the concept from our previous shiur, we continue. Avimi brei derav derebi avo. Avimi is the name of the son of Rebbe Avo. Havumaski bei zuzi bei chozoi. That means that Avimi was chayev, he was in debt. He had a financial debt to people in bei chozoi. Shadrinu biyad chamo brei derabo bar avu avohu. So Avimi sent the debt through an agent, through Chamo, the son of Rabo Baravo. Ozal Parinu. Chamo, the agent, he went and paid the debt. Omar Luhu. So Chamo then said, Havu li Shtara. The people in Bei Chozoi, so they had a document indicating a loan, meaning they had a bill of collection. So once the debt is paid up, Chamo is requesting that they return, that they hand him the bill of collection. No one wants to pay up a debt and have the bill of collection still outstanding, enabling them to collect the second time. So he wants the shtar, the bill of collection, returned. Omru lei. So the people in Bei Chozoi told Chamo, you should know the money you just paid is not the money that's in the bill of collection. Sitroi ninu. Sitroi means literally from the side, meaning it's a separate loan. It's an outside loan. It's, in other words, Rabbi Avimi had been in debt to us for another loan as well, a milva alpe, an oral agreement. So that which you paid was to cover that particular debt. Also lekamei de Rabbi Avo. So this case came to Rabbi Avo. Omar lei is loch sadi de paratinu. Rabbi Avo asks Chamo, do you have witnesses that you actually paid them money? Omar lei lo. Chamo says, no, I don't have any witnesses to that effect. Omar lei, so Rabbi Avo gives him the bad news. Migu diyachoylim loimar, since, migu means since they could have said, lo hoyu dvar meolam, they could claim, we didn't get any money. Yachoylim nami lemeimar sitroi ninhu, they can say that, yeah, we got money, but it was for a separate debt. So that what they're in effect saying, you had better believe that the money we took from him was for a separate debt, because we could have, if we wanted a lie, we could have said something else that you would have believed, namely lo hayu dvarim me'olam. And that's all because there were no witnesses that saw a payment. If there were witnesses that had seen a payment, they wouldn't be able to say lo hayu dvarim me'olam, that we never got anything. All right, so from their standpoint, they are still going to demand a second payment because of the shtar that they're still holding on to. They still have that potential. There's another problem here. Chamo, the emissary, the agent, you might say he didn't do his job in a maximally effective way. And what do we mean by that? Maybe the shaliach, Chamo Breder Abba Barvo, should have insisted on first getting the shtar before handing them the cash. So as a shaliach, maybe we'll say he messed up and that he will have to compensate Avimi for eventually for basically causing Avimi a loss. The inyan shlumi shaliach mai, regarding reparations or compensation that the shaliach, the agent, will owe the one who sent him, namely Chama. What's the story there? Omar Ravashi Chazinon, we evaluate. E Omar lay, if the instructions were as follows. If Avimi told Chama, Shkoil Shtora Vahavzuzi, first take the shtar from them and then give them the cash, Mishalem, then for violating his instructions, he has to compensate. The shaliach, the emissary, the agent, has to compensate the one who sent him. However, if the instructions were Hav Zuzi Ushkol Shtora, give them the money and then take the shtar, Lo Mishalim Velo Midi, he won't be expected to pay anything because he did what was upon him. He gave them the money. He was willing to take the shtar. They just didn't give it to him. The Gemara rejects this. The Gemara rejects Rav Ashi's ruling. Velohi. Benkach ubenkach mishalem. Regardless of what order the instructions were given in, the agent is guilty for not having done a job in its maximum way. The Omar Lay, the one who sent him, the Mishaleach, can say to the agent, L'skuni shadartich velo lavisi. Literally, I sent you, shadartich means I sent you. L'skuni means l'taken, to make things good for me, I sent you, not to mess me up. What that means is that an agent doesn't work like a robot. That if he was programmed with instructions in a specific order, so that's all he's expected to do. But rather, he's sent as a human being with intelligence and should, we'll say, process the information and work in the best interest of the one that sent him. And that he didn't do by paying the cash before getting the shtar in return. So the Gemara's conclusion is that the agent is guilty here to compensate Avimi for his loss. Now another story. Hahi itza, there was a woman, dahavu mifkidi gabo meluga dishtori. Mifkidi means there was entrusted by her a meluga dishtori. Meluga is a vessel that contained, in this case, contained shtoros, contained documents, bills of collection. So there's someone that had a lot of debts that he was able to collect. In other words, he had loaned money, he extended credit to various people, and this meluga of shtoros represented something of value. In other words, instruments of collection. Asu yorshim kotavi le mina. The lender had died, and his heirs came demanding the documents, the meluga d'shtara. Amra lehu, she said to them that mechayim tafisna lehu, I took hold of them for myself. In other words, he had owed me money as well, and I'm keeping them. Now this concept of mechayim tafisna is a significant idea. This we had learned. This concept we had learned in our previous shiur, that tfisa, according to Rabbi Akiva, for example, we had at the top of Mem of Pei Dalet Amud Beis, the second line from the top, we saw this idea. We're going to evaluate this, the application of that idea in this particular context as the Gemara goes on. Asoi lekamei de Rav Nachman. So the controversy was presented to Rav Nachman. Omar law. Rav Nachman said to the woman, Is lech sahadi de tavua mineich mechayim velo yohivis nihale? Do you have witnesses that their father had sought the return of these shtoros while he was alive, and you refused to give it to him on these grounds that he owed you money as well? Omra lay low. So the woman says, no, I don't have witnesses to that effect. So the Rav Nachman says back, Im kain, havi tfisal delachar misa. Then what you are really doing is you're taking advantage of the fact you're in possession of them through tfisa. You're grabbing them, keeping them for yourself, but only after his death. The concept of tfisa mechayim is a taking of something when the one from whom it was being taken had a chance to challenge it. Then the tfisa mechayim is significant. In other words, it withstood the test of the one from whom it was being taken. But here, you're just taking advantage of the fact that he's dead, and therefore it's not utfisa d'lachar miso lo klumhi. And the fact that you're holding on to it doesn't give you the rights to continue holding on to it. Let's take a look at Rashi. It appears less than halfway down the page. Have a tfisa de la achar misa, shikolzman sheyachai hoyu pikodom biyadach. As long as he was alive, this container of shtoros, this meluga de shtora, was merely an entrusted item by you. Entrusted for watching purposes, to guard them, for security purposes. And in that sense, it's as if they're in his possession, in the deceased, it was in his possession the whole time. When we speak about tfisa mechayim being effective, kigon shirau korov lamus, deceased was seen prior before his death, just before his death. V'tafas metat l'shem chovo, v'lo hoyu pikadam biyado, and where the creditor had taken hold of articles in payment of a debt, but and not that they were in his possession for the purposes of watching them. So we continue in the Gemara with a new case. Hayi itza the Chayva Shvua Beidina de Rava. There was a woman that was obligated to take a vow. In other words, vows are taken when someone is attempting to collect money, and the party that from whom the money, the debt is trying to be collected, we'll call it the debtor, the one who owes the money, so they are denying that they owe the money. So when a person denies an attempt to be collected from, in order to back up his claim, they would have to swear, I don't owe you anything. So there, you have a woman like that needed to take a shivua in the basin of Rava. Omra lay bas Rav Chisda. Rava's wife said to her husband, to Rava, let me correct myself. Omra lei, the wife of Rav Chisda said, Yodano bo de chashuda ashvua. So she says, as we said, to Rava, she says, I know that woman is capable of lying even through a shvua. In other words, she would take an oath, but it would be a lie. Well, what do you do then when you have a shvuah? Taking an oath is a very powerful tool, but when its effectiveness is brought into question, so what do you have left to do? There's the following method: afcha rava lishvuah ashekenegda. So there's this is the rule that when you have someone that is suspect in lying, you then have the right to switch the shvuah to the other party. In other words, to the one who is trying to collect. The basic format for shvuas is that the one who is denying is the one that has to take the oath. However, when the one that would be taking the oath is suspect of lying, so we enable the party that's trying to collect that they would take an oath that the money is owed to us, and that we haven't been paid. Zimnin, on another occasion, Havu Yasvi Kamei Rav Popov Rav Ado Bar Matona Aisu Hahushtora Gabei. A document was brought, a bill of collection was presented to Rava in his court. Omar Lei Rav Popa. Rav Popa mentioned Yodana Bey the Shtora Priyahu. I know that this shtar that the holder is trying to collect with it, that it's a shtar that has been paid up already. Omar Le Iko Inish Achrino Bahade Demor. Do you have someone else with you that can testify to that effect? In other words, you, Rav Papa, are saying, I know that this shtar has been paid up. Do you have a second witness? When you're dealing with money matters, only if you have two witnesses can the law be executed. You're saying something on your own. Omale Los Rapov says, no, I don't have another witness. Omale, so Rava said, Afal Gav de Iko Mor, even though there is you, nevertheless, Eid Echod Lav Klumu, a singular, solitary witness, is nothing. Omar Le Rav Ado Bar Matona. Rav Ado was the second gentleman sitting there, and he says to Rava, well, you're not going to believe Rav Papa. The Lo Yehei Rav Papa Kebas Rav Chista. You're not going to give Rav Papa the believability that you gave to your wife. In other words, when Rava's wife, who is the daughter of Rav Chisda, when Bas Rav Chisda, Rava's wife, said, I know that she is suspect of lying, so Rava immediately believed her. And when Rav Papa says, I know that the shtar has been paid up, you don't believe him. So here you have a very, very surprising answer. Bas Rav Chisda Kim Li Begava. Regarding my wife, I know that she would never lie. More Lo Kim Li Begave. But Rav Papa, I don't have that same level of confidence. Now I know that this is shocking, but I can't do any better right now than the words of the Gemara according to Rashi. Omar Rav Papa, Hashta di Omar Mar Kim Li Begave Milsahi. Now that Rava has established this concept that when you are confident in someone telling the absolute truth as being a milsa, means something of significance, something of halachic import, kagon Abba Bar Mori, the Kim Le Begave, someone like this gentleman whose name is Abba Mor. Kigon Abba Mor Bri, it might be his own son, because Bri means my son. So Rav Papa is saying, someone like Abba Mor, my son, The son's name would be Abba Mor, my son. The Kim Li Begave, I know with certainty that he would never lie. If Abba would tell me that a shtar has been paid up, Karano Shtara Apume, I would tear up a shtar based on his word. The Gemara asks, Karano Salkadaitus, you would tear up a shtar? Tearing up a shtar is a very final act. In other words, the creditor who would be trying to collect with this document would now lose out. He won't be able to collect anymore. Rashi says, "Karano salka daitoch v'chi echad ne'mon lahoitzi shtar chosu miyad ha-machzik bo," is a singular witness, as trustworthy as he may be, is a singular witness capable of our removing a shtar, a signed shtar, from the one that is holding onto it. And those, in order to tear it up, I have to take it away from the creditor. Afuki mamonahu, that is tantamount to removing money. That shtar represents money. You're taking money away by taking it and tearing it up. Utreboyinon, for afuki mamona, it's an ironclad rule. You need to have two witnesses. Up till now, for example, with the Basra of Chisda, it wasn't a function of taking away money. It was a function of redirecting an oath from someone that was suspect of taking an oath, but we weren't taking money from so-and-so. What does Rav Papa mean when he says that based on Rava's rule of Kim Le Begave, I would do something based on my Abba Mar's word? Ela, rather, Marana Shtara Apume. Marana means to weaken. In other words, if someone comes into my court trying to collect money with that shtar, and Abba Mar would tell me that the shtar has been paid up, I won't help the guy to try to collect the money. Hahi Itza, another story, the Ichaiva Shvua Be Dino de Rav Bevai Bar Abaye. There was a woman that had been obligated to take an oath in the Beis Din of Rav Bevai Bar Abaye. Before we continue, just a word about this incident. It's going to be introducing a topic that we have on the side under our nosei, our topic heading, E Chayshinon Lemechsi Keshikra Barichas Shtoros. Do we concern ourselves with the creation of a false impression? Mechsi Keshikra means giving the appearance of a lie when it comes to the preparation of documents. Now, I understand that at this point that might sound a little abstract without a concrete example that we'll Amir Tzashem see as we go on in the Gemara. So in the meantime, we have a woman that is obligated to take a shvua. Why? We explained earlier a situation that would warrant an oath being taken where she denies owing money to some claimer. So the one who was claiming the payment that she is denying, Omar Luhu Ahu Baldin, the litigant that was opposing her or is trying to collect from her and she was denying. So the Baldin says, Tesi v'tishtaba b'mosin, I want her to come and swear in our town, Efsher d'michsefa umoidya, because she would be in a place that people know her, she would be, mitzvah means be embarrassed. She would be embarrassed and she would opt rather to pay. Oma omra lehu, so the woman says, kisfu li zachvisa, dechi mashtabno yahavi li. I want you to write a document that would indicate I came and swore and And through the oath, I'm now exempt. I don't have to pay. And entrust this document in the hands of a third party. That I'm adding that comment from the based on the Tosfos Reed that you see on Omid Beis, where he says that she understands that she can't get the document now before she takes the oath, but she wants to have it written up ahead of time, and that's a very important point. Have it written up ahead of time and give it and entrust it in the hands of a third party. The Tosfos Reed calls a ne'emon, biyad ne'emon is a third party. So what you have is a situation of a woman that hasn't sworn yet, but a document will be written up indicating that so-and-so lady came to our court and she swore that she doesn't owe the money. And that would all be written up in the past tense when it hasn't taken place yet. Omar Lahu Rav Bevai Bar Abaye Kisvula. So Rav Bevai said, have it prepared, write it up. Omar Rav Popi. So Rav Popi objects to Rav Bevai's suggestion, and he says to him a phrase that you find several times in the Shas, indicating that Rav Bevai. When the phrase appears, indicating to Rav Bevai that you're saying things that are inaccurate, you're saying literally cut off things, and that is associated with the fact that he is a descendant from the house of Eli. Eli was a Kohen Gadol in the time of Shmuel Hanavi, and without getting into the entire biblical account. But he was cursed that his descendants would die young. They would be cut off. There's another explanation that Rashi gives, but this is the first one he gives, and it's seen in numerous places. So Rav Popi says to Rav Bevai, Mishum da'asisu mimuloi, because you come from muloi, or people that are cut off, amrisu mili mulai, so you say cut off words. In other words, you say things that aren't accurate, not to be relied on. Ha'omar Rava. Rava says, "Hi, Ashar Sudadaini." Rava speaks about a different case, but the principle will be the same. A Ashar Sudadaini is a court verification where three judges sign at the bottom of a contract or of a document that the document is honest. It's not a forgery. That's an Ashar Sudadaini. So Rava says, "Hi, Ashar Sudadaini de Michtava Mekami de Nechfu Sadi Achsimus Yedayu Psula." If a court verification is signed, is written up, the text of a court verification is written, and it would read that we, the judges, saw the signatures on this particular document, and they are not forgeries. Now, if you would write up that document before Mekami, the Loshin of the Gemara was Mekami, before, and we dashed on the line, because that's a key point here, before the witnesses verified their signatures, that's Mekami de Nechvu Sadi, Nechvu is to demonstrate or to testify, saying that these are our signatures. So, such a court verification would be Psula. Alma, what do we see from here? Psula means it would be unfit, unacceptable. We wouldn't be able to rely on such a court verification. What do we see from here? Merci, Keshikra. It is a court verification written up prematurely. That appears to be a lie. What do you mean? We three judges were sitting here and saw that these signatures have been verified. But they haven't seen it yet. They're just out of convenience. They wrote it up ahead of time. That's not acceptable. So Hachinami, so to you here, having this document for the written up for the lady that she had sworn and is thereby exempt from paying the debt that was claimed from her when she didn't swear yet. That is merci kashikrut, appears as a lie. The Gemara continues and says, Velesa. And that is not a consideration. Midrav Nachman, based on Rav Nachman's teaching, the Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Hoya Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir, in a totally different context, said, "Afilu motzei ba'ashpa v'chosmu v'nosnu la kosher." This statement of Rabbi Meir was made in the context of divorce documents. Divorce documents have to have the names of the man and the woman that are being divorced, with other details in there. And imagine a divorce document is found in the garbage with the and with names in it, and someone passing by says, "Hey, you know, I'm planning to divorce my wife, and the names match mine and that of my wife." So he takes the divorce document out of the garbage, and then has witnesses sign it and give it to, and then he then gives it to her, his wife, and she's considered divorced. Now, that wasn't written up for this particular couple. It was written like prematurely for a different couple altogether, and still it's okay. V'afilu rabbonon lo pligi olei de Rabbi Meir elo begite noshim deboinon ksiva lishma. Even the rabbis, the rabbonon, the chachomim, the we'll call the majority opinion that disagreed there with Rabbi Meir, they disagree on a technical point, not because of the false appearance that the shtar gives us, but rather because in the laws of writing divorce documents, the actual text of the divorce document must be written with proper intent. That's called ksiva lishma. Ksiva means it, the writing of it with the specific couple in mind. And in this case, that specific couple was not in the mind of the one writing up the shtar, after it was found in the garbage and someone else picking it up just out of coincidence. It happens to be the same names. So the Rabbanan can't accept it, but on a technical basis. And that's restricted to the realm of divorce documents, avo b'shar shtaros. With regard to other documents, modu lei, the Rabbanan would concede to Rabbi Meir. If you have a document that says, Bill lent Roy some money, and Bill has a document in his hands that enables him to collect $50 from Roy, and Bill lost the document, and some other guy walks by and finds a document like that, and his name happens to be Bill, and it just so happens he lent Roy money, the same amount. It's okay. That means you can, that second party who happened to find the document can use it to collect from the person he had lent money to. The Omer of Asi, Omer of Yochanan, Shtar Shelova Boy Uporoi, Eino Choyzer Velova Boy, Shekvar Nimchal Shibudo. Let's translate it first. A shtar, a bill of collection that a person had presented to someone because in exchange for his having received a loan, and the loan was paid up, and the person that had borrowed the money needs a loan, again, a second loan, for the same amount. So the law here is he cannot use it again. That's Eino Chozer V'Lovabo. He can't use it again for a second loan, even though it's the same amount and it's the same names, but for a technical reason. Shekvar Nimchal Shibudo. A malve, a lender, when he receives a shtar, that entitles him to collect not only from the person to whom he loaned the money, but from properties that were sold after the loan had been extended. The properties that were sold by the borrower, those properties are in effect something that the lender has a lien upon them. When a debt is paid up, so that lien is erased. It's no longer in existence. So a shtar, a bill of collection that is, let's say, called recycled, is used again, it's dangerous in the sense that it would enable the lender to collect properties that he no longer has a right to collect. So what's the reason that we cannot recycle a shtar? Only because of an outside consideration, that's the danger that to which you're subjecting purchasers, people that bought lands after the loan from the borrower. Rashi, three lines from the bottom, says Shikvar Nimchal Shibudo, Mishaporoi, Botel Hashtar. Once the debt was paid up, so the bill of collection is voided. Vinimseis Milve Hashnia Milve Alpeh. The second loan that the borrower needed to take would be without the writing up of a brand new shtar, would it be essentially an oral agreement. And oral agreements, the Eina Goyve Min HaLikuchas, oral agreements cannot be collected from people that purchased land from the borrower. That's a rule. A Milve Bishtar creates a lien on his properties. A milva al pen, oral agreement, there is no lien on properties. So we point out, taimo de nimchal shibudo, the only reason with this, we call the recycling of this shtar, is because the liens were canceled or finished. Avol merci, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, le keshikra, but as far as a false appearance, lo chashinon, that doesn't bother us. What's the false appearance in the case of the loan? Very simply, the recycled shtar is a shtar that was not written for this loan. We would have used it if not for the fact that we're worried about the purchasers, the lekuchos, the lien issue. But the basic idea of having a document that doesn't reflect the absolute, well, so the absolute truth, that itself doesn't bother us. Rashi continues at the top, lo chashinon, im lo shiesh bedavar bitol shtar gomor. Okay, so now, with that having been said, what do we see? We see that the attack that was made by Rav Puppy on Rav Bevi would seem to have been unjustified, because in the final picture, Rav Puppy's objection was what we call merci kashikra. But we see from the end of this Gemara, as the Gemara said on the fourth wide line, Valesa, we don't worry about merci kashikra in preparing documents based on Rav Nachman's teaching. So as far as the woman was concerned, she wanted to have a document written up prematurely before the oath was taken. That would have been okay. No one would have lost out by that, because that document would have been entrusted anyway to a third party until she actually had taken the oath. And after she took the oath, she would get this, we'll call this receipt of her having taken the oath. We continue in the middle of the top line of Amud Beis, with a marking that draws our attention to the Mivneh structural note. And you'll note that from this point till about halfway down the page, we have Gimel Mikrim, three cases in Mivnim Domim, with very similar structures. Bechol Echad Mehem Hoya Hafkada Shel Pikadon Baal Erech. In each one of the cases, you see, we have a double underline which highlights entrusted articles of value. So if you, before, we'll go back to this note of just looking at the Gemara itself. Top line, you see, the Afkid Shev Marganisa, there was an article, what was entrusted in that story? Seven Marganisa, seven pearls, something of value. On the next story, indicates the Afkid Kosa Vikasva, there was the entrusting of a silver goblet, also something of value. And the third story is the Afkid Metaksa. There was Metaksa is an expensive fabric, an expensive type of garment, a garment made of an expensive fabric, possibly of silk. Three expensive items are featured in these stories. And we continue in the note on the side. Vashomer Shochiv. You'll see a trapezoid or volcano shape in each one of the stories. The Shomer, the one to whom the items were entrusted, dies suddenly. Velo Osa Tzavo, and he never issued a will, or more accurately, a tzava is generally speaking a will, but it means instructions of what to do with the various items that are or were in his possession. U'b'chol mikre, in each case, nifsak loseis la'toiveya. The ruling is, give it to the one who's claiming the item. V'lo amoron elo da'toveya lohoya rogil etzlo. You'll notice this, another marking, a dashed underline. You'll see this in each one of the stories. The halach of giving it to the one claiming it is true only if he was not a regular visitor by the shomer, by the guard, the one to whom it was entrusted. So for reading purposes, it's important for us to, maybe we'll read a little slower the first story, but story 2 and 3, there's no need for us to translate each one again and again, basically the same words. The only basic thing that's changing in these stories is the item that was entrusted. And in Gemara markings, we often use markings just for the sake of showing similarity in structure between different pieces of Gemara. And here is a classic example of that. So now we continue on the top line in the middle. Ahu Gavro, there was a man, the Afgid Shev Marginisa, that had entrusted 7 pearls, the Tsairi Bisadina, and they were tied up in a sheet, Bei Rebbe Mesha Bar Braid Rebbe Shoben Levi. And they were entrusted to the household of this gentleman, Rebbe Mesha. Shochiv Rebbe Mesha. V'lo pokid. Rabbi Mesha died suddenly, and he didn't issue any instructions. Osu l'kamei the Rabbi Ami. The case came to Rabbi Ami, where the owner came to collect from the heirs, and the heirs were saying, "What are you collecting this? Maybe it belonged to our father." Omar lay. So Rabbi Ami says, "Chado." Point one, Diodana Bey be Rabbi Mesha Barbrade Rabbi Shua ben Levi Delo Omid. First of all, I know that he was not a man of means. He was not a wealthy man. The Oid Ha Koyoyev Simona. And furthermore, the one trying to collect is giving signs. He's saying that there were 7 pearls and they were wrapped up in a sheet. So based on these 2 points of information, I give greater believability, or I grant believability to the one claiming it. The lo amor anela, this is qualified though. This is said only the lo rogil da'il v'nofik lahasam, that the tovea, the one claiming it, was not a regular visitor. Ayel v'nofik means go in and go out from there, from Rabbi Mesha's place. Avo rogil da'il v'nofik lahasam, if he was a regular by Rabbi Mesha's place, I could figure in Shachrino Afkid, it was entrusted to Rabbi Mesha by someone else. The Ihu and this guy claiming it, he happened to see it. He placed his eyes upon it. His feelings of desire overcome him, and he wants to claim it for himself as his own. So if those factors are in place, that the guard, the one that was to whom it was entrusted, was not a man of means, and in this particular story there were even signs that the tovea, that the claimer, was able to provide, and that the claimer was not a regular by the entrusted one's home, we can give it to him. Hahu gavro the afkid kosa the kaspa bechasa. It was a man that had entrusted a silver goblet to the home of Chasa. Shachiv Chasa v'lo pokid, he died, didn't give instructions. Also the kamei to Rabbi Rav Nachman, the case came to Rav Nachman, Omar lehu, Rav Nachman says, Yodana bei b'chasa d'lomid, first of all, I know that Chasa was not a man of means. V'yoid ha koyoiv simon, and the person trying to claim it actually gives some descriptive marks, a description of the item, indicating that he must be the owner of it. V'lo amor anel de la rogil de ayel v'nofik la'asam. Avol rogil de ayel v'nofik la'asam. Ei marini shachrino afkid ve'ihu mechsechaza. Hahu de afkid metaksa bei ravdimi achfo de rav safra. A person had entrusted a silk garment, something of expense, of value, to ravdimi. Shochiv Rav Dimi v'lo pocket, died without leaving instructions. Also the Kamed Rabbi Abba, the case came to Rabbi Abba, Amalu Chado for point one, Diodana Beba Rabbi Rav Dimi v'lo omid. V'yod ha koyoiv simona, v'lo amorna v'lo rogil d'ayov v'nofik losim. I'll give it to the one claiming it as long as he wasn't a regular over there, Abba. Rogil d'ayov v'nofik losim, emo in shachrino afkid, v'yihu mechse chaza. And now we have a new story, and on the side of the Gemara we have a Noseh topic heading, Hamachalek Nechosov Leploni, V'nokat Bishmo Tuvya. Someone is dividing his property. It seems that the person was anticipating his death, so he's dividing out his properties, and he indicated that he wants to give something to Tuvya. V'lohoya Boru Le'eze Tuvya Iskaveng. Ech machlit, and it wasn't clear which tuvia he had in mind. How can we decide to whom to give? The Gemara, ahu de omar lahu nechasai l'tuvia. Someone that said, "I want to give my property to tuvia." Shochiv. So the man died. Also tuvia, and tuvia came in. Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Rei bought tuvia. Here he is. Here's tuvia. Omar Tuvya, Viosa Rav Tuvya. The deceased had said that he wants to give his properties to Tuvya, and someone who is known as Rav Tuvya, Rabbi Tuvya, walks in. So we say, L'Tuvya Omar, L'Rav Tuvya Lo Omar. The deceased said he's giving it to Tuvya, not to Rav Tuvya. The Inish de Gaius Bay, if the Rav Tuvya that walked in happened to be someone that was very close, very friendly with the deceased. Rashi uses the expression rogulet, though. It means he was common by him, but common in the sense that they had a very familiar relationship, very friendly relationship. The Hagispe, then Rav Tuvya for this guy becomes Tuvya. They're on a first name basis. He would call Rav Tuvya by his first name, simply as Tuvya. So when he said, "Give my property to Tuvya," he had in mind Rav Tuvya. The only reason he didn't say Rav Tuvya is because of Gisbe. They were very close with one another. Osu Shnei Tuvya. Two people named with the same name come in. Well, who do you give it to? Well, Shochim v'Talmud Chochem, Talmud Chochem Kodem. If it was a neighbor and the other party was a Torah scholar, you can rest assured that the deceased had in mind to give it to the Torah scholar. Bear in mind that these are cases where we don't have anything else to go on. All he said was, "Give it to Tuvya." And these two people, let's assume that he... let's assume we don't have any other information. So, who should we give it to? So we say, give it to the Talmud Chacham. And now Rashi points out, Talmud Chacham Kodem, the Mistama, we're looking at Rashi about a third of the way down the Rashi commentary, the Mistama Odom Matzdik Maisov Lizkois Bishas Misa. A person, before he dies, you can assume wants to gain maximum merit. What does a person take with him to the grave? What does a person take with him to the world to come, to the next world, to the world of eternity? He takes with him merits, mitzvos. He takes with him the mitzvos that he performed in this world. He doesn't take with him his luxury automobiles. He certainly doesn't take with him the real estate that he purchased and invested in during his lifetime. And he doesn't take with him even his friends and not his family. He takes with him his merits. So a person, before he dies, would want to achieve maximum merit. Well, how do you do that? Well, in this particular case, he was distributing his property to Tuvya, and one of the two Tuvyas happened to be a Talmud Chacham. And Rashi goes on to say, Diyomar Mar, quoting the Gemara Brochus, Rashi points out, Kol Nevim Lo Nisabu Elo Lemahane Talmidei Chachom Minichosov. the prophets are full of prophecies of let's see, wealth and opulence, of great fortune. To whom? To those who benefit Talmidei Chachamim, who enable Talmidei Chachamim to benefit from their properties. In other words, when we speak about the Nevuas talk about the prophecies of the world to come, of total good. For whom were those prophecies stated? For those that enable Talmidei Chachamim to benefit from their wealth. So this person was about to die. You can assume he would have had in mind giving it to Tuvia, who was a Talmud Chacham. Another case that could arise here with the Tuvia story: Korov v'Talmud Chacham. Imagine a relative comes with the name Tuvia, and a non-relative by the name of Tuvia, who's a Talmud Chacham, comes. Again, Talmud Chacham Kodem, for the same reason. Ibayala, what about, we'll call the two losers in the last two cases? We saw the Shochein losing to the Talmud Chacham, we saw Korov losing to a Talmud Chacham. What happens if those two come? Shochein v'Korov mai, who do you give it to in that case? A neighbor versus a relative, the relative who's not a neighbor. Toshma, we have a pasuk that says Toiv Shochein Korov Me'ach Rochok. Literally, better is a near neighbor than a relative that is distant. I'm not saying a distant relative, because the pasuk uses the word Ach, it's a brother, but a brother who lives afar. So that we see from this pasuk that a person would be closer, and having this legal ramification, be closer to his neighbors than even his own brother who lives afar. What happens in this case? Shneim, the two tuvias that come as krovim, are both relatives. Shneim, shcheinim, both tuvias are neighbors. Ushneim chachamim, or both of them are talmidei chachamim. You have two tuvias, both of equal standing. What do we do then? Shuda the daini. Rashi, shuda the daini, hatolas hadayonim. Rashi translates, shuda means it's for the dayonim to, hatolas, for them to, literally, to place matters. Lefi mashi yiru hadayonim. According to what the dayonim see, shayadaka shomes the kareves ze yoser mize. The deceased was closer, seemed to be, to endear himself to one of the two more than the other. Give it to him then. Oy mi she b'shneim toiv v'noyeg b'derech yishora. Or you have the two of them, but one of them is a better person. Sheish lomar bo niskavin hames lizkois. Giving the property to a person who behaves, whose behavior is nicer, that would be a greater source of merit to the deceased if it was bequeathed unto him. So in seeking out merit, he would give it to the party that was a finer individual. We continue in the Gemara. You notice that we have a slash mark indicating that as we go on, a new trend of thought appears. Before we continue with the text itself, we glance at the side, the nosei, the topic heading, Hamoicher Shtar Choiv L'Chavero. A person had lent money, and when lending money, the borrower gives the lender a Shtar Choiv. He gives him a document, call that a bill of collection, and entitling the lender to collect the debt at some point. The lender didn't want to be bothered, whatever reason, he needed instant cash, and the loan wasn't due yet, whatever the case is, he sold the bill of collection. He sold the debt. What happens, inevitably, when you sell a bill of collection, the face value of the loan was, let's say, $100. The guy, the lender, needs instant money, so he'll settle for taking $80, giving the bill of collection to someone else. So now we have a purchaser of this bill of collection. The purchaser, obviously, when the loan becomes due, he'll be able to collect $100. V'chazar u'mochaloi. And the original lender then is moichel. He forgives the loan. He tells the borrower, you know, you owed me money. Yeah, you don't have to pay it. Mochel. That is effective. It's effective in releasing the borrower from paying up the loan. Now you'll ask, oh, that doesn't sound fair, but didn't someone buy that bill of collection? Okay, that's another issue. That has to be dealt with, but as a separate issue. Right now, we're dealing with what we'll call brass tacks. The original lender forgives the loan. It's forgiven. And not only that, v'afilu yoresh mochel, even the heir of the lender is capable, has this power to forgive the loan. That is by way of background or overview. We look at the Gemara. Omar le Rava, le Brei de Rav Chiya bar Oven. Rava tells the son of Rav Chiya, Ta emaloch milsim al yusa da have Omar avuch. I want to tell you something, literally something good, something interesting that your father used to say. And here it is. We've used quotation marks, you can see, for the next three lines, to enclose the next three lines. This is the milsa ma'aliyasa, the interesting or the good thing, the important thing that Rav Chiya bar Oven had told Rava. And now Rava is sharing that with Rav Chiya bar Oven's son. What's the halacha? Hol diyomar Shmuel, that which Shmuel says, ha'moichish tar choyv l'chavero v'chozru mochaloi mochul, v'afilu yoresh mochel. Shmuel had taught that one who sells a bill of collection to a purchaser, and then the original seller, the original lender, who was the seller of this, forgives the loan, it is considered a forgiven loan. The loan doesn't have to be paid up. And not only that, but the yoresh, the inheritor, the heir of the malve, of the lender, can do the same. Moide Shmuel b'machneses shtar choyv lebaila v'chozru mochlosai, a woman who gets married, a woman to whom money was owed. And she gets married, bringing into the marriage this bill of collection. That's called, she's machneses shtar chov to her husband. It then becomes, it becomes included in the properties that a woman brings into a marriage. The chazro machloso, and then that woman who is now a married woman, she states mechila, the forgiveness of the loan. Shmuel concedes in this case she'eno mochel, the loan is not forgiven. She is not the, we'll call the sole owner of that loan. Because the husband, when a woman gets married and brings properties into the marriage, the husband becomes an equal of the wife with regard to those properties. So that's what Rava had heard from Rav Chiya bar Oven, namely that even though Shmuel grants mechila powers to the malveh, not so in the case of a woman who was once a malva and then got married. Krefse de Rav Nachman, a relative of Rav Nachman, Zavinto l'ksubosa betoivas hana. The ksuba is a marriage document. It's of a financial guarantee given to women when they get married, entitling the women to collect a minimum. There's a basic amount of money. We've referred to this many times in the Masechta Monam or Sayim, 100 or 200 zuz. There might be a Tosefis additional amount that a woman collects in the event that she is divorced or becomes a widow. Now, the story here features a married woman. This is a relative of Rav Nachman's family. that Salter Ksuba B'Tevasana means she sold the Ksuba rights for Tovasa means a relatively small amount of money relative to the face value of the Ksuba. Let's just use round numbers. The face value of the Ksuba was $200. But the idea that would be paid is contingent upon either the woman becoming divorced or the woman's husband dying. If she dies first, so there's not going to be any payment made. So she sells the Ksuba rights to some outsider, and what happens is that the outsider, let's say, takes over the position of the woman. Will the outsider collect that Ksuba? Well, it's a risk. Will the husband predecease the woman, if that be the case? So instead of paying the woman, it will be paid to that outsider. But it's a risk. Maybe the woman would die first. If the woman dies first, so that outsider is not going to get any collection. That's why he's not going to, for a ksuba worth $200, he's not going to pay $200. He's going to pay a smaller amount of money. That reduced amount of money is called toivas hana. Igrisha, the woman was divorced. Ushchiva, and then the woman died. Well, if the woman was divorced, that means she was in the position to collect the ksuba. But now, in the meantime, someone else had bought it from her beforehand. So they're coming to collect the ksuba. Asu, the ones that bought the ksuba came, kotavi lo labarta. They came to collect the ksuba from her daughter. Rashi, hachi garsina, we're looking at Rashi toward the end of the Rashi column. Osu tavi lo labarta, osu lekuchos, the purchasers of the ksuba came, because tavi lo labarta, habo ligvois ksubas imo meaviha. The daughter of the deceased woman was being that the woman had been divorced, there was money owed her, but she didn't collect it. She died before she was able to collect it. So her daughter, who is her heir, comes to collect instead. So the daughter comes to collect, and she's coming to collect from her father. V'lirash haksuba mikoch imo. She's coming to inherit the ksuba through her mother. V'elu bo'in litoil oisohimeno. And these purchasers are coming to get it from her. Lomar, with the claim, imoch mochra lanu. Your mother had sold the ksuba to us. We continue in the Gemara. Omar Luhu Rav Nachman. Bear in mind that this story involved a woman who was related to Rav Nachman. That was just the line above. Kravsei de Rav Nachman. This is a relative. The woman who sold the ksuba was a relative of Rav Nachman. So her daughter is also a relative of Rav Nachman. So Omar Luhu Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman speaks, he speaks out into the air, we'll say, he says, Leka de Leisva lo Eitza, is there no one that's going to give her, meaning our relative, is there no one that's going to give her an Eitza, a piece of counsel? We continue at the top of that Pei Vav. Tezel, v'tichlo l'ksubosu de'ima l'gabi avua, let the girl simply forgive the ksuba. The ksuba was a type of called debt, if you want to use terms like a loan, so it's as if the mother, I say as if, it's not, it didn't really happen, but it's as if the mother had loaned the father money. What do we mean by that? She didn't loan him any money, but the father had owed money to the mother. Oh, the mother had owed money to the mother? So didn't we see just before that the heirs of people to whom money was owed could forgive the debt? So let her, the daughter of the deceased woman, to whom the money was owed, by virtue of, or who owed her the money? Her father. Let the heiress forgive the ksuba debt that was owed to her mother, forgive it to her father. In other words, her father then would keep the money. And when the father dies, the girl will advertise Samine, and the girl will inherit that same amount of money from her father. And in the meantime, with this having been done, so she's pushing off the purchasers. She's getting the purchasers off her back. Shama, well, the heiress heard this. Ozla Achilta, she went and forgave the debt to her father. Says, Dad, you know, you owe the ksuba money to Mom. Forget it. You don't have to pay it. We continue with Rav Nachman. He introduced, we have a little aleph at the bottom of Amud Beis, of Pei Amud Beis. That was the first stage of Rav Nachman's talking in regarding this story. Now Rav Nachman continues. Omar Rav Nachman, osinu atzmenu ke'orchei hadayonim. Rav Nachman figuratively kicks himself and says, ah, we made ourselves like orchei hadayonim. Orchei hadayonim are people that plan out legal strategies, legal claims for a particular party against another party. It's not the party themselves that are claiming what they're claiming, but it's an outsider helping them out. That's in the eyes of our tradition, something that is unacceptable. It's certainly not proper. Rashi on the second line from the top, Osinu Atzmenu, we made ourselves Kikorov Shel Bal Din Oyavo Habo Eitzel Dayonim Ve'Orchoi B'Rayos Achar Schus Oyavo Krovo. It's like a relative or someone who's extremely friendly with one of the litigants in a controversy, and he goes to the judges and speaks on behalf of their relative or friend. Kach limadati etzo lezu lahafsid sheknegdo. I did the same thing. I helped my relative out to cause a loss to the ones that were coming to litigate against her. Okay, but he did give that advice at the outset. So the Gemara asks me, Ikora my sovar, ulibasof my sovar. At the beginning, what was Rav Nachman thinking? Bearing in mind that Rav Nachman knows very well that one is not to be like an Orchei Hadayonim. So what was he thinking at the beginning? Ulibasof my sovar. And at the end, when he regretted it, what was he thinking? The Gemara explains, Me Ikora sovar, at the outset, he was figuring, Umibsorcho lo tisalem. The Pasuk says that one shall not ignore, tisam means hide themselves from one's own flesh. In other words, when it comes to your concern and care, your primary concern and care should be for your relatives. So whatever you can do to help your relative, you should do thusly. And that's what he did. Ulebesov sovar, and at the end, he figured, Odom choshuv shiny. And here Rashi is very revealing. Odom choshuv shiny, lefishe lemedim heimenu. There are those that would learn from Rav Nachman's behavior. V'yeshiyasu af sheloy lekrovim. There are those that would do this even for people that are not relatives. So if I just looking at the words, it seems to me, and maybe you'll agree, maybe you'll disagree. It seems to me that even though there is an objection to being ke'orchei hadayonim, if let us say you are an insignificant person. In other words, you're not someone that serves as a public role model. You're a private individual, not well known. People aren't going to learn from you. And your relative happens to be in trouble, and he has to present his case to the judges. You, as a relative of the person in trouble, would be allowed to talk to the judge, to serve as his representative, maybe as his lawyer, if you will, and presenting his case at the expense of, in other words, even though your assistance is going to help your relative and cause the litigant, the other party, to lose. But that's okay. So just to review what we think is the conclusion here, that if you weren't an Adam Chashuv, the concept of Mibsorcha, Lo Tisalem, is a stronger consideration, or under those circumstances, the objection to being ke'orchei hadayonim, that objection doesn't exist, and you should care for your relative. But as Rashi says, but if you happen to be a public figure, a rabbinic figure, someone from whom people will learn, then they shouldn't do this, and they should be as cold and objective and as uninvolved as possible. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.